The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Technology. Hi, I'm Dom Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. And joining me today on the panel are Pat Scott. Hi, Pat.
Hello there.
And Father Andrew Kinstetter. Hi, Father Andrew.
Hello, hello.
Hello there was totally an Obi-Wan reference, I'm sure.
And I couldn't repeat that. I usually do that, but Pat beat me to it.
Exactly.
Oh, well, sorry about that.
I let her go first this time. So this week, where it's a Thanksgiving week is a slow news week, especially in the tech industry, unless we want to talk about Cyber Monday deals, which is apparently the only thing that anyone was talking about in tech, which, frankly, we talked about Christmas shopping list last week. But this time we can talk about something that's sort of a perennial concern, a question, one of these discussions that I think we all need to have, we need to think about, and that is about your Wi-Fi security in your home. Pretty much these days, if you have internet access, you have a Wi-Fi router in your house. It's a complicated little device that really is important for your own privacy and security. And you got to keep it managed properly. And they're not always easy to do. These days, they're getting a little better. Some of them you can do from your phone. But even then, some of the concepts and the language is still fairly technical. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about some home Wi-Fi security tips. And we've got a couple of articles that list a bunch of them. And we're going to kind of go through some of these to discuss it. Now, one of the things I want to kind of start out talking about something specific to my setup. I have the Eero, which is a mesh Wi-Fi router. It's fairly advanced. Eero is now owned by Amazon. It's fairly advanced. And we have so it's mesh, which means that there are some satellite units that help spread, that bathe the whole house in a Wi-Fi signal. And it's managed via an app on my phone, which is different because there's no other way to manage it. You can't access it like routers used to be from a special web page in your web browser. It's just the app, which is can be a limitation for some people. What do you all have for your Wi-Fi routers? Father Andrew, what are you using?
I was just pulling mine up. I have a Linksys router, and so I still can go to the IP address and manage my router through just a web browser.
Okay.
And I forget exactly the model number, but I just bought it within the last few months when I moved to the new parish. They had a really old router, and so I just got rid of it and got a new one. So I just have the one. And I don't need anything more than that. It hits everything that I would need it to.
Right.
I have my iMac is hardwired to it for podcast purposes, but it also reaches everywhere in the rectory that I would need it to. So,
and are you the primary user, like just yourself?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm the only one. The office, even though it's kind of attached to the rectory through a breezeway, but the office has its own wireless router. Its own separate network. Yep. So I am the primary user of the rectory's Wi-Fi, and I'm the only one who has knowledge of the
password.
The password, yeah, to connect to the network. Yes, yeah. Yes.
How about you, Pat?
Well, I have a router that I bought that connects to our Spectrum, Spectrum
cable.
Cable. Thank you. I can't even think of words tonight. It is a web-based browser. However, I also have a Google Mesh setup.
Oh.
It plugs into the router. It is not a router itself in the traditional sense. It, you know, you just plug it into whatever router you've got.
Yep.
And then it sends its own network out to the rest of the house. And I've got like three total units, one downstairs, one downstairs and one upstairs, and then another one downstairs. And it spreads it really well across the house. And that one is strictly an app-based thing. But there again, it has a lot of the things that you would do on the main router. It can do in the mesh to set up its own passwords and set up its own security, et cetera, because it's a second network basically in the house.
I should clarify, my setup is kind of like yours. I forget. Like, so I've got the router that my provider, internet provider, I have Verizon Fios, they provide a Wi-Fi router with my system. But I turn off the Wi-Fi aspect of that. So it's the Wi-Fi antennas, all of that is off. And which I do that partly because I prefer the Eero and I don't want them to fight with each other over the radio space. But also, Verizon has this, I forget what they call it, My Verizon or something, where they kind of carve out a little space for public Wi-Fi. So any Verizon customer who sees one of these public hotspots can hop on, which it's not so much that it would be insecure that they could get in and see my files, but they're using some of my bandwidth. Verizon says they're not, it doesn't really hit you, but heck, I need all the bandwidth I can get, and I don't want anybody taking any. I'm greedy when it comes to my bandwidth. So, and then the Eero does all of my Wi-Fi. So that's right. A good point. So that the router that they've supplied, that I can still access via a password. Via a web page that I access through my browser. It's a private web page, 192.168. Something.
I keep my Spectrum Wi-Fi still on just in case something happens to my Google and it drops out. Then I've still got another one I can try. I'm hardwired into the Spectrum router in terms of my actual computer.
Okay.
So
yeah, I have I have a 16 port switch next to me that I have nearly
I think
filled.
Enough, maybe.
Yeah. I have a lot of equipment. So my situation is somewhat unusual, but I also have a lot of stuff on Wi-Fi throughout the house. So let's talk about some of these tips that have been provided. The first article we're going to go through from is from a site called Naked Security by Sophos. Sophos is an antivirus and security software company, and they have this great blog they call Naked Security, where they cover security news and tips and sort of stuff like that. And so we'll have a link in the show notes. But their first tip is apply the updates, and that's really important. Your router is the router manufacturer is constantly updating its software to make patches for security holes or anything else. And if you want your router to remain secure and safe, you got to apply the updates. The nice thing with the Eero, for instance, is that it updates its own. It automatically updates its own software firmware overnight when I'm sleeping, which is great. I mentioned a couple weeks ago I had some issues with that because it was messing up my HomeKit setup. It was making my Philips Hue hub lose connection to the internet and not coming back. But in the last update, it didn't do that. So I think we might knock on wood be past that. But so update. What do you think of that? If your router doesn't update automatically, is it something that you think a regular person could do or should do? What do you think?
I guess most of my customers wouldn't do it. And now in terms of the Google Mesh, yes, it updates itself too. But my main router, I have to remember to go do it. And quite frankly, I don't do it very often.
Right.
It's just out of sight, out of mind. Most of the attacks against a router, I guess I think that the average person isn't going to be affected by as many things as they put out patches for.
Right.
I guess if I see somebody having trouble, that's one of the things I first do is to update the firmware or the router software just in case that's a problem.
Okay.
Or if I see something that I suspect might be some DNS poisoning or something like that, yeah, I'll go ahead and do it. But quite frankly, I don't expect most of my clients to do that. It's a good idea, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I noticed that my wireless router, I'm looking at the settings right now that it has automatic updates already checked.
Good.
So, I mean, so
yours may be a later model than most of my clients have. Yeah.
That's what I assume is that maybe the newer models that's automatically turned on because I never went in and turned that on myself.
Yeah.
That was just something that was there, which, yeah, out of sight, out of mind, I'm comfortable knowing that that's downloading updates on its own. And the average user just, yeah, isn't going to probably even think about it, or not to throw my parents under the bus, but I needed to access their router at one point, and trying to find the password to get into the router was, you know, kind of a hassle.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty private then.
Which, well, they also live, you know, out on a ranch in the middle of nowhere. So even that's added security for that. But still, like, the average person, if you ask them if they know how to log into their router, they're going to probably give you their Wi-Fi password and think that that's the same thing.
It is not. Yeah.
Correct. So, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, for most people, it's a very good idea to do it, but the average user, I'm not sure if it's essential.
So the router I get from from my internet provider has the default username and password printed on a label on it. And we'll get to a tip about that in a minute. But the thing is yes, all get your admin username and password and put it in your password manager, because as we've talked about many times, you should have a password manager. Put that in a secure place so that even if you don't want to do it, if you have somebody, a friend or a kid or somebody who comes and helps you, they'll have it and they'll do it. Mm-hmm. But also that might be a reason to upgrade your router if it's more than a few years old. It might be time, because that also kind of goes along with our second tip, which is make sure your encryption is up to date. Now, encryption is how it scrambles the signal between the router and your device, your computer or your phone. The standard is WPA2. So and which is fairly old. I mean, it's been around for 16 years. There are some routers used to do WEP. That is a completely insecure. It was cracked many years ago. It'll take a script kiddie about 30 seconds to break into it. So don't use WEP. And frankly, I remember the day when people just didn't put passwords on their routers. Yep.
At least the companies are putting default ones on there, and even making the Wi-Fi sometimes nonsense words joined together. So at least it's something they could type without having to go look it up every second.
Yeah.
But I think that more recently, if the router is very slow anyway, I usually say if it's more than 3 years old, go ahead and get your company to replace it, or go ahead and get a new router. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the third tip is to, which is related, is to pick a proper password. In other words, use a good password. And here's something to say. You don't have to type in your password very often. Okay. Usually you type it in once to the device when you've changed it, you know, the password, and then it's set. There are ways to, in fact, in both Android and iOS devices, you can set them up so that they read a QR code and set up your Wi-Fi credentials. So, and I'll link to an article that I found online that explains how to create such a QR code, because it's great if you have guests and you want to put them on a guest network, which is another thing we'll talk about in a second, or if you are changing the password on a regular basis and you've got, you know, five kids with phones or iPads and things that need to change them. This is a way to disseminate this information fairly pain free so that not everyone has to type it in. But have a good password, not an easy to guess password. There's another tip in a different article that we'll mention that recommends changing it once a month. What do you think of that? Is that
the articles that I've read about places that required people to change passwords more frequently actually made it worse, because they would then tend to write them down where everybody could see them, you know, easily so that they wouldn't have a problem logging into their account. It was more problematic to have it changed more often. It was more important that it be a decent password.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think if you have a change password every month sort of thing, you're going to come up with a, I mean, unless you're using a password manager that randomizes it, you're just going to like have the same base password and then just add like the month, you know, right. or the just an increasing number. I remember right. I used to do that for my for the computer that I had at the cathedral, because we had to change our passwords every 3 months. And it was just like, so I just, you know, it was just an increasing
pattern.
Number. But if someone really wanted to try to crack it, if they figured out my base password, then figuring out the add-on would be a relatively simple process.
And I guess, too, to me, it's also a risk of, what's the risk if somebody gets that Wi-Fi password? They have to be close enough that they're sitting outside your house, probably, or if you're in an apartment next door. Mm-hmm. But what information do you have that is real necessary to secure? If I've got a little 90-year-old lady in a little house, the importance of that password versus how complicated it is for it to be typed in
right.
is different than if it's in an office somewhere where you're needing to protect the business secrets.
And
so, yes, I think it should be a decent password, but I don't think it should be uppercase, lowercase, three special symbols, and, you know, all of that, making it every other character, you can't type it in. And I right. have more people who get locked out because they can't type it in.
Right. You know, the other thing to consider is what sort of data can be sniffed by someone who's on your Wi-Fi network. Right. And frankly, you know, if you're connecting to your bank, you're connecting to any secure, it's already using, you know, HTTPS and TLS and various encryption protocols in addition to whatever your Wi-Fi's encryption is. So it's not like they're going to necessarily be able to sniff out your password to your bank or something like that. I mean, you don't want someone rooting around in the files that if you've got an open file, like a file server or something like that, or a public directory that's available on your local network, on your computer or something along those lines. You don't necessarily want someone rooting around in that. But the fact is most people are probably fairly safe, even if someone was on your Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, because many times their computer's already got a password on it, so that stops it from getting any further than the front door in many right. times. But there's a lot of people that don't have a password on their computer, and I go along with that for my 90-year-olds. But on the other hand, they're probably not more than recipes that they're going to have
right.
If they're at risk.
Yes.
And there's already a Wi-Fi password on their router.
Right, right. So it's about layers of security. Really, I think,
yeah.
you know, and you don't have to build the Great Wall of China as your outer layer of security necessarily. You know, you don't have to live in a bank vault, basically, as an analogy.
Reasonable security.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I would point out, too, is if you are concerned that someone is on your router and is potentially, you know, trying to do something malicious, is you can get into your router settings and you mm-hmm. can see a device list of every device that's connected to your network. And so you can go through that and say, you know, I recognize these 10 devices, but this 11th one, I don't know. And most routers, you can kick that off the network.
Right.
Or change your password so that yep. from now on it's different.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
That's another good tip is to periodically look at the list and see who's there, what's on there, what's, do you recognize? And, you know, sometimes you'll buy a device and you'll put it on your network and what it tells the router its name is not immediately obvious to you what it is.
It's sometimes the numbers or something.
Yeah. And I've actually had a few times where I'm like scratching my head going, what is that? And it turns out that's that new, you know, light bulb or something. You know, it's like, why are you calling yourself that? But it's worth looking at. And sometimes you see, like, you know, Jamie's MacBook. You're like, who's Jamie? Jamie, not on here. And, you know, I think you mentioned something else that's really relevant. Again, another thing about how each person's situation is different. Whether you live on a ranch, that's one thing. If you live in an apartment building, well, that's a whole nother mm-hmm. question that you need to be maybe a little more secure with. So those elements come into it.
Or in a nursing home when you've got lots of people on. At that point, you've got just like an apartment building. You need to protect your stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. One thing that I have done is and a lot of Wi-Fi routers allow you to do this, is I've set up separate profiles. So I have a profile set up for all of the devices that my kids access. There's a couple of iPads and iPhones in there. And with the Eero, you can set up content filtering. So they're not able, those devices in that section can't access these kinds of sites, or very, I can make specific sites that they're not allowed to access. They will, I can also turn off the Wi-Fi for those devices during certain hours, which is really nice. I ran into a little problem. I tried to block streaming services on their devices because I don't want them watching Disney Plus, The Mandalorian, or anything, YouTube or anything like that, without supervision. That's one of our big things. But when I turned it off, it turned off Apple Music for them, which I'm fine with them listening to music whenever. And it's like, I could whitelist the servers for Apple Music, but I don't know what the servers are. And they're apparently not Apple.com because I tried that. So I don't know. So I have to do a little more research on that. But
I bet you the Apple Care could probably give you a little bit of help on that.
You know what? I probably should try it. I didn't even think to try it. I think I will contact them and ask, how can I whitelist the Apple Music service? That's a good idea. So I'm going to, and if I find out, I will report back on the show. Profiles are a great way to, and I also have a profile set up for all of my Internet of Things devices, all of my smart home stuff, so that if I get like some type of sense that something is violating security, I can shut them all off with just one touch, and they're all off the internet for whatever, I don't expect I'm going to use it, but it's there for to help.
I was back to the Wi-Fi and the router password. Mm-hmm. If you're helping other people set up routers, like people like your aunt or your uncle or your mom or whatever, one thing I've done is you've got physical security in a house and you've got router security with the firewall, but they need to know if somebody comes in how to help them with their router. I've been suggesting that, yes, change the default one that the company puts on it, but then put a little label on the bottom of the router, tape it on the bottom. So physically, a technician's going to go over and look to see what router it is and look and, oh, here it is, but nobody who's not in the house could get to it.
Right.
And yet it is something that is written down for them.
Right, right. That's a good idea.
Both a Wi-Fi password and the router password.
Yes.
Would be a place to do it. But as I say, I put it on the bottom. It's not visible. It would have to be somebody physically that knew that they were looking for that. And if they're already doing that, then they're already in trouble.
Yeah.
If it was a bad guy. That's not what they're going to be going in if they're broke into their house.
Yep.
I've got a couple other points to make, too. One that's helpful if you have iOS devices and sharing a password is that if you are already connected to like your own home personal network on your iPhone or iOS device and you have a friend come over and you want to share the password on an iOS device, when they try to connect to your network, your phone or your iOS device, usually if you have it open, and it'll recognize that there's another iOS device that wants to connect and you can share the password.
Without them ever seeing it, right?
Right, right.
Exactly.
So that's especially if you have a super long, complicated password, you can share it without having to type it in. You can share it without them at all seeing what it is. And that's super helpful.
Thank you.
The other point that I wanted to make, too, is routers have the option of having a guest network as well. So if you're concerned about having a guest who's coming, connect to the same exact network where all of your devices are connected, you can turn on a guest network, which is its own separate, ID, wireless ID on your device, and they can connect to that. And then they would be separated from all the other devices that are.
And if they've got a virus, you're protected.
Right. So
yes,
that's often something that you would see seen done or,
right.
Some people will have like a little framed print on their wall that says, the guest ID is this and here's the password. And
Airbnb, for instance, or something.
Yep. Airbnb is a great thing that I've seen it at. So,
yep. The network name, you like when you look in your Wi-Fi list, you see all the different routers you can attach connect to, or the networks, Wi-Fi networks. So that name is you can choose what it is. There is a default one. The Xfinity one is Xfinity Wi-Fi, and there is a million of them in every neighborhood where there's Xfinity. It's the same thing with Verizon. Link sets all
has their own AT&T. Yeah.
So what you can do is in order to avoid confusion is you can give your own personalized version of that. One of the articles suggests that you don't want to use any personal information. You don't want to put your address in it. That's for sure.
And sometimes your name just becomes a goad for somebody to say, I didn't like what she did last week. So yes. I'll try to get in. Mm-hmm. So put something with initials or with some pet name or something that nobody else is going to know.
Don't challenge the hackers to hack in. Hack this, you script kiddies. That's a bad idea.
My brother used to use Sniper. and he said he never had anybody try to get to him.
I've seen FBI surveillance van.
That's a popular one.
Yeah, I've just put the TARDIS as my SSID before. Something that I know, but, totally not revealing personal information.
Exactly. So you don't want to review. You can even turn it off so that it doesn't broadcast it. So the only way to connect to your network is if you already know the name. And so you can enter that in. And so it's sort of hidden. And in fact, you could do that with I've seen this in Airbnbs where they have the primary network hidden. And the only one you can see is the guest network so that the owner can always get online with their private Wi-Fi, but that's a little more advanced. One of the things to keep in mind, one of the tips it gives is to turn on MAC filtering. And this is an advanced tip where every device that connects to the internet has a unique number that's a hardware number. It has to do with that particular piece of hardware. And normally it doesn't change. It's set at the factory and that number is what that is. It's a long string of numbers. And You could filter it and it broadcasts it. Each device broadcasts it when it's on the network. And you could say only these devices with these MAC addresses are allowed on my network. And if you're really trying to be really secure, that might be a thing to do. There is something you have to be careful of, which is that newer devices running iOS 14 or iPadOS 14 and probably, I think, Big Sur, I haven't installed it yet and I'm not certain, but it might be true with that as well, is they have an option where you can anonymize that number. So your device will change it when switching between networks so that you can't be tracked across networks, which is, I think it's a nice idea. So, for example, if I walk into, in days when we walked into stores, I could walk into JCPenney, their Wi-Fi network sees my device, and then I walk over into Starbucks and their Wi-Fi network sees my device. I don't even have to be on their network. They still see it. My device, because the Wi-Fi is on, and they can trade information about people who go to JCPenney, also go to Starbucks, that sort of thing. There are more nefarious uses of that as well. But if you just don't want to be tracked across Wi-Fi networks, you can turn that on. I don't think it's on by default, but you can turn that on and you can anonymize it. But that would interfere with the ability to do this MAC filtering. You would get filtered out every time you turn your device or you left the house and came back, you wouldn't be able to get on. You'd have to fix that. So just something to keep in mind.
And I've had more people that did filtering like that, and then all of a sudden could not figure out why the new printer they were had got wouldn't work. And so it almost backfires on you.
Right.
So you have to use it judiciously.
Yep. And it's amazing how many things that you don't think are on the Wi-Fi network that are.
Yes. Yep.
Especially with everything that we buy nowadays. It's
right.
It's yeah.
All that smart home stuff. Yes. Is all on the internet. There are other tips in the second article. The second article is from a website called comparatech.com. And they have a bunch more, a little more advanced suggestions, things like turn off universal plug and play. What exactly is universal plug and play? What devices would I have that would use that?
Printers, especially, things like that, because sometimes, I'm trying to remember, there was something that you had to poke a hole in the firewall for a certain device, unless it was plug and play. And when plug and play was there, it didn't have to worry about it. It could configure, it would tell the router how to configure the router for it.
Okay, that's the distinction. Yeah.
So if you want to keep your security safe, theoretically, you should turn off the plug and play so that a device can't tell your router what to do.
Right.
You want it to be the other way around. You want the router to control what the devices can do. But, and it was for ease of setup. That was really what it was for.
But you're going to want to. But then if you do that, you're going to need to manually poke a hole in the firewall. You open a port for every device, make sure that so that's something to keep in mind. If you're not handy with that, it's not a huge security hole. And that's just one of the things that we have to keep in mind. It's not a huge security hole at the moment. But it's
the same thing along with the WPS button on the router too, where it says, okay, you can say this printer will ask the router, what is your password for me? And it'll go get it itself. That is somewhat of a security hole, but how important is it?
Right. I mean, someone would have to have access to your router physically to press that button and do that. So
yes, yeah. Yes.
There's some others. Turning on the firewall, definitely should always have your firewall on. In fact, I think most newer routers come with the firewall turned on. Trying to think of other things. Static addresses, you probably don't want to deal with that. Well, the one that made me laugh.
I have had some printers that I had to do a static address, but that's about the only thing.
The one that kind of made me laugh is turn off your router at night. And I'm thinking, these days, that's a bad idea just because these days, so many maintenance functions for so many computers happen at night when you're not using the computer for school or work or whatever. I do cloud backups, and constantly overnight, I've got a lot of data streaming out, and that's the best time to do it. So I
would point out, though, that what makes the point, though, is that, like, if you're sort of in a panic and you think something is going weird and screwy and you just don't know what else to do, the simplest way is just unplug it and turn it off. And right. I mean, and then call someone who knows what they're doing and then kind of regain your footing. So I would use it more in that kind of a situation versus just a standard. Yeah. I'm going to turn it off every night for security purposes.
Yeah. And then there are some really off the wall ones, like creating a Faraday cage and things like that. Well, I won't get into that, but but you can read them in the links that we'll have in the show notes if you want. But I think if you do the basic ones that we mentioned already, you should be pretty secure. Have a good password, use good encryption, that sort of thing.
One of the comments I wanted to make is the VPN thing. I've had several clients that, we talk about VPNs and how when you go to a hotspot, you should use a VPN because that way nobody can see any of the plain text traffic that's going across. But I have a few clients that have gotten so happy to have a VPN that they put it on their home networks too. And in some ways, your router is already doing the encryption for Wi-Fi, and it basically ends up slowing down your network a whole lot if you put a VPN on. Yeah. Some of them is about 50% throughput. But if somebody really was writing that book that was an expose of their senator and wanted to make sure that nobody got to it, go ahead and do it.
right. In general, you probably don't need to be running a VPN through your router from your computer. Yeah.
There are some people who were concerned that, who can see my traffic? Well, of course, your internet provider can see your traffic, and they don't want that.
Right.
So I've got a few, I would say, extreme cases that do run a VPN because of the sites that they go to. They don't want anybody knowing that they've been there.
There are certain professions like lawyers and doctors whose data needs to be very secure, or people who work in government or law enforcement, that sort of thing, whose data needs to be very secure. Usually their security is provided by their employer, unless they're self-employed and that sort of thing. But there are cases where you'd want to be ultra secure. So I get that. I get it. All right. I think that should do it for now. If we might even revisit this topic again, especially if you, the listener, have any questions about things we didn't cover, any Wi-Fi router related questions, we'd be happy to field them and see some more discussion on it. But this should, if you just follow the ones we talked about, that should do you pretty well. So before we move on to our next segment, I do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Technology, including Kim L., Michael S., Craig C., Mary N., and Daniel Z. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the secrets of technology in all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So let's talk about some headlines. So Microsoft is working to help us. Microsoft tries to kill the pointless work meetings, says the headline. Although I do need to point out that Microsoft is somewhat responsible for pointless work meetings by inventing PowerPoint. So let's just call a spade here with Microsoft. You know what I mean? You have things to make up for. No, apparently, according to the article, I'm not sure exactly how this is going to kill the pointless meeting, but it says that they're patenting a technology that could, through a mix of cameras and sensors for physical gatherings, predict the likelihood of a meeting being useful and suggest alternative times, locations, and people. If a meeting was likely to be ineffective, it'll score unnecessary meetings on body language, facial expressions, the number of attendees. And I didn't read the patent filing because it's legalese and very dry, but I'm trying to figure out, is this, we're going to grade meetings that you're already had and then tell you whether you should continue to schedule more of them? Because
that's what it sounds like, is it saying, you know, yeah, subscribe to our service. We'll tell you the times that we think you should reschedule a meeting because the time was bad or people seem to be checking out because it was after lunch on a Friday and things right, like that. Here's a product in search of a need, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not going to get at the heart of what makes a problematic meeting. They're not going to be able to, you know, the person who wants to go on a tangent for 20 minutes, that, I mean, yeah, I guess it'll notice all the scowls and the facial recognition, but you're not going to solve that problem through just rescheduling the meeting for a better time that, you know, you might have more coffee in your system.
Oh, I've been.
It sounds like there's better management techniques that can be used rather than this type of a grading system.
I would hate to think of the low scores that some of the meetings I used to go to at the Pastoral Center in Boston for the Archdiocese. Oh man, some of those all hands meetings were painful. So yeah,
maybe it is a way though for people who are concerned about it to turn on some type of metric system.
Yeah.
So that they have something to back up there. Hey, we're spending 90% of our time in meetings that have no point to them.
Right.
I could see that maybe if you That's were true. Having an efficiency expert come in and look at your company.
That's right. True.
It would be foolish, though, to let the software say, you know, we're going to let Microsoft figure out when we should schedule meetings. That it should be a tool to help the management rather than a directive from Microsoft.
Yeah, well, you would hope.
You would hope, yes. Right. So
I'm sorry, Bill says we have to do this on Tuesday morning at 9:30.
Yeah. That Bill Gates is messing up my life. Our next headline, Amazon, we mentioned before about this new Amazon Sidewalk feature. Amazon Sidewalk is turning on in your Alexa app, whether you want it or not. I used the A word. It didn't turn on my devices. That's good. I had to stop and check whether she's listening. As we said before, Amazon Sidewalk is a feature kind of, it's not a user feature. It's a feature built into all of Amazon's devices that lets them use a bit of your Wi-Fi network to connect other devices, your cameras and your other, but also it sort of extends the range of your network, including sometimes to devices that don't belong to you, that aren't yours, but are like your neighbors or someone walking past, and sort of creates this giant mesh, basically this. I'm trying to think of the best way to, a cloud of connectivity that sort of moves out from your home, and anything that enters that cloud can use some of it. It sounds a little, yeah.
Have you seen The Dark Knight?
Yes.
That's what it reminds me of, is like using all the other cell phones as pings to, but that's probably right. Not a good analogy, but.
Right, right. So,
well, I've seen some things about towns that set up a little mesh network using very simple routers to allow people out on the street to be able to use Wi-Fi without having to use their cellular. It's kind of that, like that, only in neighborhoods.
Well, it's not, this isn't something that you would connect to on your phone. This isn't a way for you to get online. So this is what the Amazon's message says. Amazon's Sidewalk is a shared network that helps devices work better. For example, if your device loses its Wi-Fi connection, Sidewalk can simplify reconnecting to your router and help set up new Echo devices. You can also extend the coverage for Sidewalk-enabled devices such as Ring smart lights and pet and object trackers so they can stay connected and continue to work over longer distances. So, for example, if I have a Ring camera that goes off my Wi-Fi network, there's a secondary network that says, hey, that Ring camera is not connected. Let's reconnect it and give that information from through Bluetooth. It's almost like a Bluetooth connection, like with tile trackers and that sort of thing. The thing is there may be reasons for you to not want this on your devices. Some people are a little leery of the security implications. They're a little leery of Amazon having a private network of all of your Echoes and Rings and whatnot in your home, separate from your regular network that lets other people connect through your network. Your philosophy of privacy is going to have a lot to do with whether you think this is a good thing or not. There are some people who have an aversion to the tile trackers because your phone not only helps you find your tiles, but it helps any tile user find any of their tiles that are near your phone privately. But some people get the heebie-jeebies. Well, the Amazon Sidewalk network is turning on, and you may not know that it's on your devices. If you have the Amazon Alexa app on your device, your phone, your iPhone or Android phone, you can open it up. You go to more settings, account settings. There's an Amazon Sidewalk section, and you could click the button to turn Sidewalk off if that's what you want to do. I personally have it off for now. Let somebody else be the beta guinea pig, and we'll go from there. But that's just my personal preference.
Yeah, and I can understand why. You know, I've had a lot of people that are very unhappy with doorbell cameras or the outside cameras because their Wi-Fi really isn't strong enough to go through their wall to the outside. And so, if you had a neighborhood where this was all in effect, then yes, it would help all of them.
Right,
but. Yeah, I think it's until it gets to a certain point, people are going to be too concerned to actually give it a try.
Right.
I just wish it wasn't turned on by default. I'd rather it be an opt-in versus you're in it whether you want to or not until you opt out.
Right. Yeah. Opt out is always bad. Bad for the user. Just, you know, unless it's a security feature, then opt me in, like we were saying with the Wi-Fi routers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the next headline, this one's just for you, Father. This is Super Nintendo Land is opening in Japan on February 4th of 2021. Apparently, they're not being held back by COVID. And you said that earlier, you told me that there's one coming to Orlando as well, right?
Yeah, because it's Universal is the broader umbrella company. So Universal Studios in Orlando, last I heard, they were in process of building the same sort of park, but in Orlando.
Okay.
But I don't remember when the debut date of that was supposed to be. And I'm unfortunately not going to go to Japan in February for this.
Right.
But it looks really cool. And from a technological point of view, they have a looks like a Mario Kart roller coaster with AR glasses that you can actually compete against other people on the ride.
Wow.
So that would be a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, see, now you just have to have them do a really good walkthrough VR experience so you can do it on your Quest.
right.
Which I'm looking forward to.
So it's a roller coaster. So the car you're in is on rails, but because you're wearing an AR helmet, it looks like you're moving all over the place. So
the 1 minute sort of preview looked really cool.
Yeah.
And I just pulled up a web browser. The Orlando one is supposed to open sometime in 2024.
Oh, so we got a ways to wait.
Yeah. COVID will be long gone by then. So I'll go to that one.
There you go. All right. And then our last one, this is a kind of a fun little one. It's sort of technology related. There's a social scientist on Twitter. Her name is Kate Petrova. who came up with some interesting data, and this is correlation data, not necessarily, you know, causal, but she came up with this data that tracks, if I can see if I can say this correctly, because I'm not a social scientist. It tracks people's reviews of scented candles on Amazon, mainly the reviews from people who say their candles don't smell like anything. And it tracks with the prevalence of coronavirus infections in the country. And as you know, one of the symptoms of coronavirus is you lose your sense of smell. And so there's this idea that the reason people are giving all these bad reviews to scented candles is because they've lost their sense of smell and they don't realize they have COVID. There actually have a lot of people out there who are, they don't get the fever or whatever, or they get a mild one, but they get that symptom. And she's got a whole Twitter thread of all this data that she goes through. But it's kind of interesting to look. I love this sort of data correlation stuff out there that, you know, whether
it's not necessarily causal. It's just interesting to see how, as the wave of people, the proportion of people who complained about the scented candles was going up at the same time as the infections were going up.
Right.
And down again when it went down. And so it was interesting, too. People said it would be nice to see if we could do a study of like other perfumed products and see whether that was the same thing.
Right.
And it's going to take some data gathering and in a way that people would have reported it, which is Amazon has a great way of people doing reporting on products.
Right.
So that's
self-reporting.
And at first she started with just one candle, Yankee Candle. And people said, well, it's always a little bit less fragrant than the other candles. Maybe just people were complaining about their quality. So she went back in and looked at four other brands and the same rates applied.
And the reviews of, she showed the reviews of scented versus unscented candles, like candles that are sold as unscented. And there was a difference. There was a clear difference. The unscented candles, they were fine. Their
people
reviews
didn't
were
care
fine.
About the quality was fine for those. Yeah.
Well, and it's sort of just funny, too. I mean, it's fun to kind of look at it from the COVID perspective, because I suspect that many of them are indeed COVID related. But on the flip side, we're such social creatures that like what I see and what I hear from other people can very much have an effect on how I react to something. So if I go on Amazon and I see a bad review or someone said, oh, this just didn't have that powerful of a scent, and then I get the same candle, I could already be psychologically be biased towards thinking that this candle isn't as strong as it should be and then having the same sort of reaction.
Right.
You know, and so like, yeah, social sciences are just crazy complicated, but fascinating.
Well, it was interesting, too, that they compared it to the Target thing with a pregnant teenager that we talked about some time ago, where they sent ads for pregnancy products to somebody that didn't know they were pregnant. Because in this type of social data is fun. And it's not necessarily going to change the world, but it sure is interesting.
Right. Well, actually, I've been reading articles like social scientists this year and behavioral scientists. This is like a giant society-wide experiment. The whole lockdown, everyone's behavior changes at once. And so how does that, you know, let's look at the data for that. I read an article, a New York Times article about how people's shopping habits, food shopping habits changed and what people ate and what people bought and how people shopped, like just the foods people ate over the first 6 months of the, how it changed. At first people were eating comfort food and then people were eating convenience foods. And like, it was just this very interesting progression. And so, so behavioral scientists, social scientists, as bad as things are, they're going to have a field day looking at the data from this year.
Yeah. I will point out, this is, I went to Walmart today, totally during non-busy times, and it was the first time that I'd ever really paid attention and noticed all the Walmart shoppers shopping for other people
that had
gotten their, you know, the pickup orders and stuff. But my first thought walking in was, why are they stocking the shelves? And then it was, oh no, they have all these grocery bags. And I'd never really paid attention until for some reason today when I was at Walmart. So that has changed.
That's
how
a big change
too.
How many people now will allow people to do shopping for them?
Oh,
Other people are going to choose their fresh produce for them. But
Yeah, we did
we have a household difference on that. Yes,
we did a delivery order on Monday, and it's like, no, jasmine rice is not the same as arborio rice. I can't make risotto with jasmine rice. Although not as bad as the friend who ordered a bag of Brussels sprouts and got a Brussels sprout.
Oh,
that's a good one. But you know, you mentioned having all the shoppers. Some of these grocery chains have opened up closed stores that they've recently closed as, I forget what they call them, like ghost stores, that they're only stocked for delivery. They're only open for picking delivery orders and stuff and pickups. It's fascinating.
Yeah, there's a block of one big large building here on Burnett Road that basically is all kitchens for delivery only. You can't go and order food there.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It's strictly just for delivery.
Wow. All right. So I think that should do it for our headlines this time. So there's some interesting headlines. Let's move right on to our picks of the week. Pat, what's your pick of the week?
Well, I happened to notice that Amazon Prime had another convenience factor that I hadn't seen before or hadn't paid attention to. In addition to Prime Movies and Prime Music, they have Prime Games. And these are not just the little tiny square games that you can go play chess or checkers or Candy Crush on. These are kind of longer games. One's kind of a detective game in which you have been locked into this place and you have amnesia and you don't know how to get out. And it's beautiful graphics and nice, interesting music and large full screen, and they're all free. And they also have things that will connect to other games. They call them loot. So that you can, within Amazon Prime, you can get loot for other games that are associated. And of course, Amazon owns Twitch. So that's another tie-in. But these are totally free games. I downloaded about 5 or 6 of them, kind of played a little bit with each one. And I thought they're pretty good. They're much better sometimes than some of the casual games that I've seen on the iPhone, for instance, or Android. They're much more detailed. And
so really these pretty. These are mobile games or?
I'm sorry. These are PC games. They don't have any for Mac yet. I am so sorry. These are PC Windows games at this moment. And I'm sure that they will expand on that. But I was really surprised. And there was one anime type gaming company that had about 10 of their titles out there. And one of them was some of their classic games. And I can't remember the name of them now, but it was initials and SKNI, or I don't know what it was, but at any rate. And so there was a whole section of those anime type games that you could go play.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. A lot of loot crates and that sort of stuff listed on their site too. Interesting.
Now, I hope that they will get into the Mac side, but, this is a nice start for some of the people who are stuck at home wanting something to do that's a little bit more exciting than solitaire.
Well, it should help mollify those critics who think that we're heavily biased toward Apple and Mac stuff. So
that's right.
this is for you all. All right. Father Andrew, what's your pick this week?
So my pick this week was very much chosen in line with our topic this evening. It's the Circle Home Plus. It is not a product that I personally have, but I've heard Kim Commando recommend it, and I've heard really good things about it. It's basically a family kind of protection and monitoring kind of hardware and software for your home network. So the Home Plus is an actual physical cube-shaped device that you plug into your router. And once you set it up, you can it will basically recognize all the devices that connect to that router. And then as the parent, you can set up profiles for each of those devices, and you can set time limits. You can restrict websites. You can restrict certain apps. You can, monitor what your children are doing. You can add time as a reward if they've, done really well in school or something. You want to give them a little extra time. On YouTube, say you can add more time. It's a parental monitoring tool for a home network, but there's also an app that the parent would have on their iOS or Android phone. But also, if they install the app on, say, their child's iOS or Android, they can then have the same filtering and monitoring software built into the phone, and that can be used outside of the network. So if they go to a friend's house or they go to anywhere else, if they have that app on their phone, and then as a parent, you have it set that they can't delete the app, then that same filtering software is used there. So it's a really good parental tool for your home network. But it also, I mean,
yeah.
And in some of the other things that we're talking about, it will actually notify you if somebody new connects to the network. So again, if you have unknown people connecting to the network, it will tell you that. It has features in it that if your child wants to try to get around the system and even unplugs it, it will send notifications to the parent that, hey, this was unplugged and it's got its own internal battery. So it actually doesn't shut off, but it stays working. So, and if you unplug the Ethernet cable that's connected it hardwired to the router, it will go to Wi-Fi and connect to the router and stay connected. So there's cool ways that it'll try to prevent, you know, a teenager from trying to circumvent the system. But then it'll always send notifications to the parent who set it up that, hey, you know, this was attempted to be kicked offline or whatever. And then you can have those conversations with your children and, hey, right, you know, what's going on, and try to have those kind of safety features involved for your kids. So it costs roughly $10 a month as a subscription for the service, or you can pay a flat $300 for a lifetime subscription.
Mm.
And I know at one point it's not there anymore, but I know a few years ago, Disney sort of almost co-sponsored it. It used to be called Circle with Disney, and Disney kind of had some, they would share videos through it for the kids and everything. And so they promoted it as well, but they're not currently listed with it, but
okay.
I know Disney at least was behind them as well.
Right. That's a good one. The best security for your kids online is to conversation with them, but this is a great way to enable that conversation.
Right.
Keep them honest. So that's good. So mine is also sort of kid related. Mine is pick of the week is an iPad case that we picked up when we set aside a newish iPad that we had for the use of the kids. And we've had troubles in the past where the kids have been careless or, you know, with the iPads, and we've had broken screens and that sort of thing. And I was not willing to let this newer iPad, I mean, those were usually obsolete except for my beloved iPad Pro that my daughter dropped when she was carrying it to me. I still have flashbacks of seeing it fall. But this is a iPad case called from CEYMAC, CEYMAC, and this is a really strong drop protection case. It has, you know, it's got the rubber thing all around it, which is good. It's got good splash protection. I'm not sure I would drop it in a pool, but it's got rubber coverings for all the ports and that sort of stuff. It has a stand so you can have a kickstand to prop it up. It has a handle so you can slide your hand in the back to hold it securely one-handed, which is great. And it rotates so you can do portrait or landscape. And it has a strap to put around your neck so that when the kids are walking around with it, although they keep the strap so long they could practically drag it sometimes, like the smaller one. Like tighten up that strap.
She could kick it.
Yes, exactly. So, but it's got a strap, so they can strap it around them, and just like several different ways of keeping it secure. It's really great. It's $23. It's
pretty inexpensive. Yeah.
Yeah, $23 versus a several hundred dollar device. I take it. It's a nice one, and it goes together in like three separate pieces that clip together. It went together fairly easy. It doesn't come out all that easy necessarily, but you probably won't have to take it out of it very often. So it's nice. And in fact, there is the part of it is a cover for the screen itself. So it's a screen protector built into it. So yeah, it's good device. All right. I think that should do it from us. What did you think of our discussion? If you have any questions about anything we talked about, including home Wi-Fi security, you can let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com/technology or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. or send an email to technology@sqpn.com. You can find links from our discussion and our picks of the week on our show notes at sqpn.com. Be sure, if you have not yet done so, subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or on YouTube at the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should make sure to also hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, Father Andrew Kinstetter, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of technology.
Of course, this was great.
Pascal, thank you as well.
Glad to be here, thank you.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.